Hello, I'm Dr. David Johnson, Professor of Medicine and Chief of Gastroenterology at Eastern Virginia Medical School. Well, just when we thought eosinophilic esophagitis was a new entity, and we recognize that a lot of times this is still being missed, enter into a new diagnosis, lymphocytic esophagitis. This has been around for a bit, and there are a couple reports that have just recently been published, one in particular that I'd like to share with you. But the entity is not well known, certainly by gastroenterologists, and I don't think even by clinical pathologists. So I want to bring you up to speed a little bit so you can start being aware of it and potentially start looking for it. What is lymphocytic esophagitis? Well, it was described back in 2006 by an investigator named Rubio, and he actually found this was a predominance of lymphocytic infiltration in the distal two-thirds of the esophagus, and he tried to bring an association together with this as an allegation of maybe Crohn's disease. This subsequently has been refuted. It's not felt to be the manifestation necessarily of Crohn's disease, and there's no other lymphocytic infiltration as people have started to look into the duodenum and the gastric biopsies, as we do with the eosinophilic esophagitis, trying to rule out eosinophilic gastroenteritis. Well, a very excellent attempt to put some clinical pathologic dialogue behind this came from Bob Genta's group at Caris Diagnostic and UT Southwestern in gut in 2012. And they looked at biopsies, and this huge number of biopsies, 140,000 biopsies of the esophagus, and they tried to ascertain what the prevalence, relative prevalence was of lymphocytic esophagitis, what maybe some clinical correlations there were. And it sets the stage for the most recent paper that was just published in Gastrointestinal Endoscopy by Tanaka and colleagues from Stockholm. So let me take these in sequence. First, the clinical pathologic criteria that Dr. Genta and his group put together. Well, primarily it's a lymphocytic infiltrate in the peripapillary space, and there tends to be this aggregation of lymphocytes. They tried to not necessarily put it together as a number per high power field, but they use a number of 30, and they tried to stay away from that, but that's similar to what we see with EOE, eosinophilic esophagitis, where we use 15 EOs per high power field, but the number really is not cast in stone. This tends to be a patchy distribution, and certainly it's something that is very histologically characteristic, these peripapillary huge infiltrates of lymphocytes. There tends to be intracellular edema. They call that spongiosis. And these lymphocyte infiltrations may be on one biopsy totally absent, on another biopsy present. So you need to do multiple biopsies, as we do with eosinophilic esophagitis. When they tried to put a disease association to this, they really couldn't. They looked at celiac sprue for one, Crohn's disease, as I attested to earlier, really have all been dismissed. Then they looked at a number of other parameters. Were the patients on NSAIDs, or was there something else that they could ascertain? Everybody was on a PPI, so that didn't really help. But they then tried to look at what were the clinical presentations of these patients, and nearly three quarters of them were for dysphagia, very analogous to what we see with EOE. One was a certain percent, 1% or so, were related to chest pain, and other were typical GERD-related symptoms. Endoscopically, these patients had very characteristic features suggestive of eosinophilic esophagitis, and that was actually the diagnosis made in over a third by the endoscopist. A third or more of these patients were normal, some had strictures, and the characteristic features of EOE that we see with linear furrows or the concentric rings, the plaques or the pseudo microabscesses type picture were very characteristic also of lymphocytic esophagitis. When they tried to then ascertain, is there a certain population in the lymphocytic as opposed to eosinophilic esophagitis, it tended to be more women later in life, so in their 60s, I don't call that later anymore, but women, 60% were women, and generally in their sixth decade, as opposed to the EOE patients that we typically see are more the young males presenting with food impactions. But these, again, are all patients that were looked at in a database. Hard to get a lot of information here. When they looked at the relative prevalence of lymphocytic esophagitis, at least in the Caris database, it was about 1 in 1,000. So very, very rare even still, but not so rare that people aren't seeing this. And it's very analogous, I suspect, to other databases like the Calexandra database, when they did this in Sweden, they didn't see any lymphocytic esophagitis, but they did 1,000 patients. So they easy to miss one in 1,000. If you did 1,001, maybe you would have seen that. So that builds up to the present study, where the investigators in Stockholm took characteristics of the lymphocytic esophagitis patients, compared it with eosinophilic esophagitis, and then looked at GERD patients. They looked then at emphasis of use of magnifying endoscopy with narrowband imaging versus conventional white light endoscopy. And in particular, what they looked at was this dilation of the intracapillary papillary networks that they look at. And these intracapillary papillary networks are loops are basically something that they use in magnifying endoscopy in trying to delineate invasiveness for superficial esophageal cancer. So these intracapillary papillary loops, or ICPLs, are something that the endoscopists that engage in esophageal cancer may be very familiar with. But what this looked like when you applied it to EoE and the lymphocytic esophagitis in the 11 patients that they had that had eosinophilic or lymphocytic esophagitis, 10 or 90% thereby had these changes evident with the intracapillary papillary loops, and all of them in eosinophilic esophagitis. When they looked at use of NBI, if you look at and think about the last time you've used NBI in the esophagus, when you hit the NBI switch, it becomes kind of the cyanine green. And in fact, when you hit it in patients with EoE or in the patients with lymphocytic esophagitis, it turns more of a beige color. So this was virtually, it was 100% in the EoE patients, and again, 90% in the lymphocytic esophagitis patients. And again, the last of these parameters are looking at the parameters of vascular integrity. And what you can see, if you look at, in particular with narrowband imaging, those that have used this, you can actually see the submucosal vessels very nicely because they highlight out. It becomes this cyanine green again for vasculature. So you want to see the submucosal vessels in normal mucosa. Well, you lose that in EoE and lymphocytic esophagitis. So if you took these three parameters, the loss of the submucosal vessels, the intracapillary papillary loop, which become more these little dot-like matrix, if you look at the pictures in the article, you'll see this and be very characteristic. And again, this beige color with narrowband imaging, it was one of these was in EoE and 100%. All three of them in EoE was 100%. And one of these in the lymphocytic esophagitis was 91%, and all three of these was 91%. So they're pretty strong parameters, and virtually never seen in the patients that had GERD. The exception is sometimes you can have these altered intracapillary papillary loops, not quite as distorted with this pit-type appearance that you see with GERD, but the beige color never seen. And again, the loss of the submucosal vessels never seen in the patients with GERD. So where does this leave us? Well, I've had a couple people that I've seen that I swore had EoE. I sent it to the pathologist saying EoE is EoE, and it came back negative. So I have to go back and look at these patients again and challenge my pathologist to look for lymphocytic esophagitis. I have no idea what the management of lymphocytic esophagitis is. We're just looking at new reports. There's an article or a letter to the editor that's coming out in Gut in the next month. Talks about spontaneous perforation in a patient with lymphocytic esophagitis. The clinical context of this really is just beginning to be defined. The more we understand it, will only be facilitated by the more we define it with accuracy. So look at it, look for biopsies, ask your pathologist to start looking for this lymphocytic esophagitis. Visit with them and understand, have them understand, as we need to understand as the endoscopist, that biopsies in normal tissue may be the telling area because, again, over a third of these patients had misdiagnoses. We miss eosinophilic esophagitis in anywhere from 7 to 30%, and the lymphocytic esophagitis patients, the number that have been viewed as, quote, normal endoscopies may be as high as 50%. So, again, the more we look at patients, in particular with dysphagia, biopsies from the proximal and distal esophagus, four biopsies at least, is something that we do for EoE. Now we should start thinking and alerting our pathologist to lymphocytic esophagitis. New entity? Let's see. Where it plays out, I don't know. But I think we need to start looking for it more and be proactive. I've certainly seen some of these people that now I need to go back and look at my own database, work my pathologist better, and hopefully have some new answers next time we chat. I'm Dr. David Johnson. Thanks again for listening.